Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, this is episode 16. Did you ever in your life think you were going to have 16 episodes of a podcast about Star Trek The Next Generation?
I didn't. This does prove that we can get something done. Our friend John Roderick in his ad read said that we were going to drop this at episode 15.
I know these two guys. They're going to do this for 15 episodes and then they're going to stop because neither one of them has ever finished a film.
And I feel like this is great that we're really sticking it to him by blowing past that number in such a big way.
My only goal for this show is to find a way to stick it to John Roderick. Of course, friend of the show, John Roderick, musician. He's also got a couple of great podcasts out there that are far better than this one. He took the time out of his busy 2-hour podcast where he opened up a bunch of presents that that listener sent him. Seriously, that's how he spent a 2-hour episode. He was opening up fan mail and gifts.
What this is going to do is it's going to drag down podcasts everywhere.
Yeah.
To be fair, he spent about 20 minutes talking about the documentary that you're making about him.
Sure. Yeah, that was nice. I believe the context for that was how it was a failure because I have not delivered on the promise of that.
Whose fault is that? He hasn't done anything interesting enough to make an end to the film.
I'm not going to put that on him. I think we've talked about this many times. My failure to complete is a major issue, and that's one of the reasons why we even put together the show, was to sort of prove to ourselves that we could come up with a project and actually see it through. And unfortunately, it's the most shameful variety we could have ever come up with.
Well, Ars Technica has now covered the show.
Covered it with a blanket?
Yeah.
So anyway, if you're interested in hearing basically a 15-minute roast of me and Ben and this podcast, be sure to find the podcast Roadwork with Dan Benjamin and John Roderick, episode 20. So it's about halfway through. It's pretty scathing and fun. Our thanks to Roderick and Roadwork for giving us that shout out. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it was I played it for my wife, and she thought it was really funny. And as I've said many times before, she is really rethinking this whole marriage thing since I started this Star Trek podcast. So
I got about 10 seconds into playing it for my wife before she just left the room. So I think I like how your marriage is going better than mine at this point.
Well, you guys have been married a little bit longer than we have. So I just think that Rachel is less close to the end of her rope than she probably will be in the next 18 months or so.
Yeah, I really give it a little bit more time for her to get a hate on. Like, does she not care when she opens up iTunes and she sees that awesome logo on the front page? How could she not be thrilled by that?
She is exquisitely embarrassed by that.
Does this show qualify as an irreconcilable difference?
Does this show qualify as something that you could bring in court in a divorce proceeding?
Those poor jurors. Like, there isn't a deposition. It's just all 16 episodes of our show. That's terrible.
Exhibit E, generally human.
Your Honor, do we have to keep listening to these fucking dick jokes? Objection.
Cruel and unusual.
Oh, jeez. I think with that, we should probably dive right into Season 1, Episode 16, When the Bow Breaks. You want to take us through, Ben?
Yeah.
Gach.biz.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
We start this episode finding out that in the future, 7-year-old boys are still not big fans of calculus. I guess there's the opening, the like cold open of this episode is a kid running through the hallway of the Enterprise, which is always, there's always tons of people walking around these hallways. I feel like mostly people are going from place to place on this ship and not actually sitting in one place doing their fucking job. But the kid plows into Riker as he's running, and this is kind of our introduction to our reintroduction to the idea that the Enterprise is a ship with families living on it. But we don't spend too much time with this episode because Riker gets called up to the bridge, and Picard has kind of a wry look on his face, and he calls Riker over and says, "You're gonna love this. We're following a trail of breadcrumbs. I guess a technological trail of breadcrumbs that ends here. And this is the Epsilon Minos system, where the legendary planet of Aldea is located. And Aldea is a planet that is legendary because nobody's ever seen it in real life. It's reputed to exist, but is unfindable." And no sooner have they established this mystery and legend than the planet decloaks immediately in front of the Enterprise.
Yeah, they almost ran into it.
Yeah.
That would have been a disaster.
That would have sucked. Which sort of, you know, like, I don't know from cloaking technology, but you would think that they would be able to detect the gravity well that a planet would create.
Yeah, you're only cloaking the image. You're not cloaking its mass.
Got to avoid bumping into stuff. And
yeah, this episode almost ended really early.
Yeah. the just untimely and unexplainable destruction of the flagship of the Federation, and then they just end the series. Well, everybody died.
I think if you're a studio executive, you sort of put a pin in that part of the script,
right,
of all the scripts that you've read. Like, well, you know, if it's really bad after this many episodes, we can just end it here, yeah, by crashing the ship into a planet.
Yeah, yeah. This nobody will miss this cast at this point, so fuck them. Let them burn.
And so Patrick Stewart gets to check out of his hotel room with the quickness, his unpacked luggage.
Still intact, yeah.
Still ready to go, yeah.
All he has to do is dispute that porno bill on the in-room television, and he's out of there.
So Troy gets a whiff off of their first communications with this planet that shit ain't right.
Yeah. They're doing more and more with Troy, but they talk to this hot lady who's representing the Aldeans and confirms that this is in fact Aldea and that they have a trade that they want to propose. So I think they beam up to the ship first, right? They like beam right through their shield, which demonstrates that the Aldeans are rocking some technology that is a little bit outside of what the Enterprise is capable of repelling.
Yeah, they do that thing that where they're too excited for their meeting.
Yeah.
It's like like they agree to meet at some unspecified time and they're like, great, okay. And then bang, they're there on the bridge, sort of like...
Yeah, it's like getting a girl's phone number and calling her later that day. It's like, guys...
That's exactly it, yeah.
Play it cool a little bit.
Yeah, they do not play this cool at all.
Yeah.
And they come up with a big bouquet of flowers. Yeah, and
they have a horn of plenty. I don't think I've ever seen like an actual physical horn of plenty. I've only seen them in illustrations. But the Aldeans have them all over the place. It's like one of the main set dressings.
It was, yeah. As we'll come to find out, they blew all their budget on that horn of plenty.
Other thing that's weird about them beaming up is they look really surprised when they... When they arrive, like they beam up and they you know, touch themselves to make sure all of their parts made it. Like,
oh really? I didn't get that.
Yeah, it was a 2 second little moment, but they don't seem to be used to beaming. I guess maybe they don't, you know, since they're not traveling around, they don't do it that often. No, but that's how they get around their planet. They beam everywhere.
Yeah.
What the hell?
I don't know, man. I think you're projecting. I didn't get that sense at all. I think they got under the ship and they were sort of repulsed by the bright light.
Yeah. So that's the other thing, is that everybody is ridiculously pale on this planet. I think it's Dr. Crusher, Deanna Troi, and Riker get sort of summarily beamed down. Like, the Enterprise doesn't get to pick their away team on this one because the Aldeans are calling the shots.
So Picard is sort of left somewhat alone on the bridge as everyone leaves. He's like, huh, interesting choice of people. And then we cut back down to the planet's surface.
So they explain that they've been unable to bear children for many years, and they have taken the strange step of revealing themselves to the Enterprise in the hopes that they could trade some technology for the kids that live on the Enterprise so that the Aldeans can kickstart their reproductive biology.
Yeah, it's your classic children for information exchange story.
We need some of your children. In payment, we will give you information that would take you centuries to acquire.
Yeah, better than arms for hostages.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe not, actually. Maybe way worse. Riker is pretty firm and shuts down this idea of exchanging the kids for anything, period. The kids are not available at any price.
Right. I mean, you get the sense that there's probably a price, but but Riker isn't willing to disclose that at that point.
Coming from a moneyless society, these people can't be that great at negotiation, right?
Right, right.
It's not like they're Armenians.
You know what? You just turned off a huge swath of our listenership by making fun of the Armenians, Ben. How dare you?
I apologize.
So Radu has been rebuked by Riker. His offer has been sort of turned down. And so...
Radu is not a rad dude.
Oh, God. You're really giving me a lot to edit out of this. Radu, you might recognize as Deep Throat from The X-Files. Did he look familiar to you? That's Jerry Harden.
Yeah, that's a real actor there.
Yeah, they actually got a real guy to play him.
Yeah.
Good job, casting agents.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Riker says no way to this whole exchange, and Radu's like, fine, I'll snatch up those kids ourselves. And so you see a scene on board the Enterprise where this yellow spotlight is sort of panning around to all the kids. A bunch of the kids on the ship are getting hit with the spotlight beam.
Yeah, it's definitely related technology to the stuff that the Haradan used to scan the holodeck a couple episodes and screw up the hard-boiled detective novel that Picard was doing.
Right, exactly. They're clearly cut from the same light cloth.
Mm-hmm.
So they're zooming this light around and they're scanning a bunch of the kids, and then bang, they grab like 8 of them. And Wesley's one of them.
The boy?
So they all disappear from the Enterprise.
Did you notice when they disappeared Wesley, they cut away from the doctor and there's a shot of Picard looking shocked, and they just looped in a little bit of audio of Gates McFadden going, "They've taken my son."
Yes, I did, because one of the primary rules of season 1 Star Trek: The Next Generation is any references to Wesley must include either the boy or
they've taken my son
from Beverly.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
so we got one of those there, thus checking that box.
I feel like they just should have cast a kid with red hair so there would be no question.
Right. Yeah. They could have.
Or just redded up Will Wheaton's hair.
Again, this goes back to the casting decision of Will Wheaton. You've taken who is demonstrably, you know, a pretty fine child actor and completely ruined him on this show.
Despoiled him.
Again, I don't think this is his fault. This is this is his handlers.
This does not rest on his shoulders.
So the kids are all beamed down, and were made pretty quickly to understand that they decided upon these children. They decided they were the best and the brightest of the Enterprise kids. And in one bit of creepy subtext, they're all white.
Yeah.
they scan a bunch of different races and ethnicities of children on this ship, but no keepers among them.
Yeah. It's not necessarily overt racism this time. Oh, it's overt. Let's be honest.
they would rather have a chubby white girl as the one playing the music than any other race doing so.
Right. I guess the Aldeans look human. Which is, you know, not a choice that they always make. I guess that's a more typical first season choice than, because I mean, like, they're still working on the original series logic of like somebody like the Klingons in the original series just have like weird beards, you know.
They don't have any head meatloaf.
No, so I guess that's maybe what's to blame for that, but. It would be weird if they were like really creepy looking aliens and they're like, we want your children.
Yeah, but go figure. It's a planet full of white people who want to repopulate the planet in their own image. So
yeah,
great.
Keep their Aryan master race going.
Sure.
So and then we come to understand that as they're kind of touring these kids around, they sort of like dole out the kids to the various families that are going to be looking after them. The chubby blonde girl who's going to be a musician is given to Grandpa Munster. The kid from the beginning of the series who hates calculus is given to, I don't know, some members of Up With People.
Yeah, and they look so much alike. It's
like a man and a woman who are in basically the same costume and basically have the same haircut. they're going to teach him how to be a sculptor. And Wesley goes with an older lady with weird dyed hair.
Go figure that Wes would be attached to an older person. It's probably where he's most comfortable.
Yeah.
It is the guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Have you not find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
This episode is brought to you by the spring cleaning champions, Manscaped. This season, make sure to groom your carpets and your drapes, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Clear out your winter bush with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and watch your confidence bloom like the springtime flowers. Hey, maybe you're getting away on weekends, getting into a swimsuit, into a sexy situation, or you're not wearing pants at all. You want to look your best from head to toe. Get yourself some Manscaped products. You know, it doesn't just have to be your junk. You know, they've got the Beard Hedger Pro Kit and a Handyman Electric Face Shaver. They make great stuff, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And you'll get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Put your best foot forward and present your new business project or political thing as well as you possibly can on the internet. How do you do that? Not through some cookie cutter form on a social media website or trying and failing to code a pretty website yourself. No, you go to Squarespace, start using their completely new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, which helps you choose from professionally curated layouts and styling options that help you build a unique online presence from the ground up that is tailored to your brand or business. Squarespace has been a super loyal sponsor of The Greatest Generation. We hope you will give them a try. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Speaking of where Wes is most comfortable, she takes him down to the computer core and introduces him to the custodian.
What does the custodian do?
It frees us from all burden. It takes care of all our needs.
They're living in a real, like, Brave New World type of society where it's totally utopian, and there's just unanswered questions that they've never even thought to ask.
It's at this point in the episode where they start really peanut buttering over the metaphor of, you know, environment and technological hubris.
Right.
And when you're talking about matters like that, I think it's important to include as many child actors as possible to tell that story.
Yeah.
Ben, you've worked with child actors before, right?
I worked with a child rapper one time. It was very uncomfortable.
Did you talk to him the way that Wesley talks to the children down on the planet? And by that, I mean, you know, there's a voice that people have when they talk to kids sometimes that's very high and sing-songy. So,
it's a voice that you would feel very condescended to if somebody used on you.
Right. That is a voice that just sort of permeates the entire episode in a way that is just so grating.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to write dialogue for children that is plausible, because kids have a very, you know, like they have a very different way of communicating from adults.
What?
No, I'm serious. It's true.
Look, man, I don't know where you read that.
So anyways, the crew of the Enterprise are understandably pretty ripshit about this whole hijacking of their children. They're, you know, Picard holds a conference in the observation lounge with all the parents who have been wronged, and Harry, the kid who hates calculus's father, is especially upset because the last time he saw Harry, he was yelling at him for bumping into Commander Riker and skipping out on his calculus class.
The youngest girl, who we'll come to know as Alexandra, her mom is there, and maybe the most 80s character we have ever seen on the show.
Oh, yeah. She has a lot of perm going on, doesn't she?
I feel like this is as much of a hairstyle show as it is a Star Trek show sometimes.
But hey, we have our obsessions.
Her hair cannot be contained in the 4x3 frame of the television. It is incredible.
Yeah. It's pretty fucking rock and roll. But anyways, Picard promises to do everything that he possibly can to upset the Aldeans' devious plot. And so the Aldeans have been saying the whole time, like, we want this to be an exchange. And even after they unilaterally abduct the children, they keep saying, like, we're going to give you all this information. So it's a fair trade. And so in order to basically buy time while, Data and Geordi work on ways to defeat the planetary shielding and beam the kids up, Picard agrees to negotiate with them. And So they beam down, and one of the conditions that he stipulates before they even discuss things is that Dr. Crusher has to go see her son, and they allow it, and she beams over to the apartment where Wesley is living and surreptitiously hands him the scanning module from a tricorder, and he very not slickly accepts it. He like actually comments vocally on the fact that she is trying to like palm this thing off to him, and he goes like, "Oh, what? Oh, and then goes and like walks around the woman that is going to be his adoptive mother if this plan goes through, and behind her head like waves the scanning module around while Dr. Crusher keeps the open tricorder in the pocket of her lab coat.
Like, if Dr. Crusher and you were going out to dinner at a nice restaurant and you showed up and and there were no tables available and she was trying to grease the maitre d', like, yeah, that would be an utter failure. Like,
yeah.
She was completely incapable of doing that handoff, but the old lady just didn't notice at all.
She was a little batty. So you blame that on Dr. Crusher, because I really thought that it was Wesley that was blowing their cover.
I mean, now that I think about it, clearly you need both palms greased to constitute a successful greasing.
Yeah. Well, maybe if Wesley gets back to the ship, they'll have to practice some surreptitious spycraft techniques together.
I mean, we know Wesley's got experience with greased up palms. I just don't think that that in this context he's very experienced.
I was looking at our iTunes reviews the other day, and somebody gave us a 4-star review and was like, "It's a pretty good show, and they're pretty funny, but they seem to think that Picard is raping Wesley all the time."
Is that why we got dinged a star?
Yeah.
How is that a good reason for dinging us a star? I mean, we basically do everything except put that in our show art. Like this is a show about Picard raping Wesley. Wow.
I don't know. I thought like I was a little miffed at losing the star, but I thought that was a funny enough reason that I let it pass.
I don't understand what the stars mean. Like, if you were to rate a podcast, do you give stars based on how much you liked it or its quality? Because it seems like we're getting dinged stars because people don't like the content. But we say what we are.
Yeah.
We are a filthy comedy podcast about Star Trek The Next Generation. And people don't like that.
We're not as filthy as we could be, too. I'd say we're holding back.
Well, we have so many more episodes to do. I can only imagine that that's where we're going. We're soon to be the 2Live crew of Star Trek podcasts.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurseth the disease.
Negotiations have broken down, and Picard does not want to agree to accepting any of this fancy data the Aldeans are offering without any concessions on their part.
Do you think it's a mistake that they don't even know what the data is that they'd be getting back in exchange? What if it's amazing?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, you have to estimate there are billions of people living in the Federation. What if this is information that could improve life on the scale of billions?
I feel like in any prisoner exchange, you should at least look at the goods, right?
I guess so. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's the way they describe the information does sound really lame. It's like, we have information on parts of the galaxy you don't even know exist. It's like, yeah, we fucking want to explore. That's our whole fucking thing. Like, if we just knew about it all of a sudden, we'd be out of a job.
I think that's another pin that the producer put in. Like, you know, maybe we can end the show by them actually agreeing to this deal. They learn everything they need to know, and then the Enterprise just goes back home.
Yep.
The end.
5-year mission over.
I mean, how do they get all this information? Did they just cloak the planet and drive it around?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, they had like a more adventurous era in their past or something. Anyways, Picard gets back to the ship, and no progress has been made. And the Aldeans say, like, listen, man, we mean business. So you can either agree to this or you can fuck right off. And they shoot an energy weapon out from the planet, kind of like orbits around the planet and hits the Enterprise. And the Enterprise goes a spinning off into the wild black yonder. And when they come to a stop, Geordi announces that they are a 3-day trip from Aldea at maximum warp. And Picard is like, get us back there as fast as possible. And warp has never felt slower. Like they go to warp and it's just like, oh man, this is going to be a long slog to get back.
Yeah, and Radu gets on the screen and he's like, do not even think of fucking with us again.
If you don't accept our terms, the Enterprise will be pushed so far away that by the time you return, your children will be grandparents.
Yeah, it seems pretty threatening, but Picard directs the ship to return to Aldea. And yeah. And so during the trip, Dr. Crusher has time to review the scans that Wesley took over his old lady. And
right, so they have these two things to contend with. One is maybe we can just fix the Aldeans and enable them to conceive so that they don't have any reason to steal our kids. Or maybe we can figure out a way to get through that shielding and take them back ourselves. And so they're kind of in parallel working on these two problems in the 3 days that they have to get back.
Right, and I think we know how motivated Picard is to get Wesley back at this point.
Yeah, yes. I mean, think about having to drop everything for 3 days.
He is just really pent up by the time he gets back to the planet. Like,
yeah,
really edgy.
He's really short with people. Just, you know, yeah. There's some fun and games when we see the kind of different stuff the kids are up to. You know, the little Alexandra right. girl plays a strange video game. The girl that goes with Grandpa Munster learns how to use a strange instrument that just plays notes that you're thinking of in your mind. And he
an instrument that can only be played while sitting on an old man's lap.
Yeah, that is like basically the creepiest, like, of all of the kind of implied violation of children that this series has done so far, this is by far the most explicitly creepy scene. But
yeah, it's real troubling. But it's especially troubling because she plays a song and the guy's like, do you know anything happier? And she's like, no. This is actually how I feel, old man.
But no scene was funnier to me than the scene with Harry, the kid that loves calculus, finishing his carving, because he is literally polishing his dolphin. The man goes to his wife like, hey, come see what Harry's doing.
God, you do not want your parents walking in on you while you're polishing a dolphin. That's for sure.
And as this is happening, the crew has found a flaw in the shielding that the planet has that is exploitable enough that Riker and Data can beam down to the planet, and they beam down into the computer core where the custodian is located. So that is that's Picard's ace in the hole as the negotiations renew.
Darmok Angelad.
Wesley has sort of organized the kids around a table, and he's like, look, kiddos, I've got a plan. And that plan is passive resistance, which up until now is a plan that I feel like Wesley could have deployed for his own safety on board
right.
the ship.
Sure.
This seems to be a new thought for him. So he tells all the kids, whenever these nice old people offer you anything, just turn it down. Just turn it down and don't play ball.
Yeah, don't do anything that they ask you to do. Just like we're not gonna do anything violent, but we're not gonna make things nice for them.
So Data puts together that the reason that the Aldeans are all sick is because their funky cloaking shield has weakened the ozone layer of their planet. Ben, yeah. You remember the ozone layer, right? It's all anyone talked about in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, I did sort of wonder in this episode whatever happened to the ozone layer as a...
I think we fixed it, right? That's
oh,
why
yeah,
no
great.
One no one knows about it anymore.
Everything's going great down there.
Yeah.
No, this episode does like tiptoe up to getting really preachy about the environment, and it doesn't really get crazy preachy. It just, I think it sort of implies that that technological hubris is a negative trait. But
well, you can only take it so seriously when a bunch of kids with Nerf bats are beating the message into the ground.
Yeah.
And so when an away team beams down, the first thing Radu says is like, "Look, what is up with these kids? You got to fix them.
Yeah.
They're being real jerks right now."
Yeah, we don't know how to raise kids. What's your problem?
Yeah, I think Radu actually tells Picard like, "Look, I'm not good with kids. You got to do something about this." And Picard kind of smirks like, "Me either."
Yeah. The Aldeans are basically shit out of luck whenever they try to use their technology against Picard after this point, because Riker and Data have defeated the computer, and so Picard has an opportunity to kind of argue with Radu over what the real solution to the problems that Aldea faces are, and it's turn off your stupid cloak and fix your radiation sickness and get real, like stop being infantilized by this supercomputer that runs everything in your society.
Yeah, give us our kids back, jerks.
Yeah, and to his credit, Radu, after pretty minor intellectual resistance, recognizes that he's been quite wrong in this matter, and they return the children to the Enterprise. And to Picard's credit, he offers to help the Aldeans fix their shit, and the Aldeans accept.
Yeah, Picard's like, keep that weird shield off and commence with the fucking.
Yeah. I feel like they come very close to having this final interaction with Radu be a pretty interesting examination of a, you know, somebody who's set in their ways, kind of determining policy and having that be sort of insufficiently good policy for the problems at hand. You know, like, this is how we've always done it. We can't change this kind of character. And it was like almost a pretty interesting argument, but I think that they just didn't have enough time in the episode to dig into that, and I thought that was kind of a shame. I mean, it's like at many turns, this episode is almost interesting.
I kept being distracted about the idea of, like, in episode 3, it was super okay for Tasha Yar to get kidnapped by that planet's people, and they were really a lot better about that than when their kids got stolen. Was it just because they were the kids that all hell broke loose?
Yeah, I mean, they also, like, went to greater lengths to sort of understand where the planet in Code of Honor was coming from in stealing Tasha Yar, whereas the Aldeans, like, they don't really sympathize with that much.
Yeah, interesting how these are similar situations treated so differently.
I am the cutest of all.
There are four lights. This episode was directed by a man named Kim Manners. Is that name familiar to you?
That sounds familiar to me.
Well, Kim Manners is a significant figure because he produced and directed a shitload of 80s and 90s television, including The X-Files. He only directed one episode of Next Generation, and this was it. But he was really like a beloved figure in the Hollywood production community. And when he died, it was like a real shock to a bunch of people.
Wow.
So much so that X-Files reboot.
Yeah.
Have you seen any of those episodes?
I have not watched it yet.
Well, there's a scene in one of the episodes, this isn't a spoiler, where Mulder gets drunk in front of the tombstone of what we are believed to know as like just some random tombstone. Like the tombstone doesn't have any significance to us in the show.
Uh-huh.
But the name on it is Kim Manners. And
weird.
And it's like his birth date and his death date, and it was sort of done as a tribute to him because he directed like a quarter of the episodes of The X-Files. So, Kim Manners.
He will be missed, not least of which is the fact that he threw more gas than ever on the fire of suspicion over what Picard is up to with regards to Wesley.
He's doing all he can. I feel like like some episodes are enabling the behavior. Mm. Some are like a call for help.
Yeah.
This episode represents one of those calls for help.
Absolutely.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
You have a Drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I should remind people that Drunk Shimoda is our award that we have named after Jim Shimoda, the assistant chief engineer in episode 2, who gets drunk and takes all the isolinear chips out of the warp core. It's an honor for any character who is having a great time or just generally acting drunk or ridiculous. My Drunk Shimoda for this episode is Radu, just because his plan sucks so much ass. Like, I cannot imagine being the head of an entire society that has a crazy existential problem like this and being so committed to your planet being a secret that stealing 8 children from a huge, you know, conglomeration of species like the Federation is really a worthwhile gambit. Like, it's some fucking ignorant ass shit. Like, they know everything about the Enterprise when they get there. Like, they've been monitoring their communications. They know everything. They know.
What did they think was going to happen?
Yeah. This dude is supposed to be in charge of their whole society. He's a fucking idiot.
I feel like one of the biggest dangers of space travel is getting your shit stolen.
Yeah. They turned from being the most cultured planet into just base space pirates.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what happens.
How about you?
Occasionally we will bestow this honor on someone who is not a character of the show. I've called you a Drunk Shimoda before.
Indeed.
I think for this episode I'm gonna give the Drunk Shimoda to composer Ron Jones. One thing we didn't bring up when we were doing the episode summary is that this entire episode has a soundtrack of like a treacly ice cream truck. And it's really bad. Like, I get what they were going for. You know, you have your musical prompt for whenever kids are on screen, but it really beats you over the head, and it is treacly and harpy and synthy, and it's really grating. So, I mean, Ron Jones has gone on to do masterful work throughout the series. The guy is a total pro, and he, you know, in many episodes makes the show better. This is not one of them. So.
Yeah, and in an episode where one of the challenges is write a melody for a child who's supposed to be a budding musical prodigy, you know, that little harp riff that her strange computer instrument makes, not wildly impressive.
It's so sappy. It's like, is it possible to play music through actual sap, like physical sap? Is there a sap filter?
Oh, I'll have to check in Adobe Audition.
Yeah, it's like that. It is just real drippy. So, sorry, Ron. Love you ordinarily, but not this time.
Sorry, bro.
What do we got coming up next?
I am Locutus aboard. You will respond to my questions. I am Locutus aboard. You are bored.
Our next episode is called Home Soil. A powerful microscopic life form declares war on humans and takes over the Enterprise's lab and computers and threatens to destroy the ship. What do you remember about this episode, Adam?
I don't remember anything about this episode. Not a single thing.
What I remember is that it's like a terraforming lab, and it's sort of like a whodunit. Like, there's a murder at the lab and they can't figure out who did it, and then you know, spoiler alert, they trace it back to this entity that's been living on the planet.
One of the reviewers said that the director of this episode had a bizarre insistence on unnatural stagey blocking and an obsession with extreme close-ups.
That should be fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that from a production perspective.
I guess we'll check it out on the next episode of The Greatest Generation.
Yeah, if you want to talk to us, you can find us on Twitter, always. We're on Twitter too much these days. So yeah, I'm at Cut for Time, and Ben is at Benjamin R, AHR.
Yeah, and you can use the hashtag GreatestGen to see what other people have said about this show and their grandfathers.
Thanks always to Dark Materia for our awesome soundtrack.
Yeah. What a generous person to let us use that, even after we went ahead and used it and then asked for permission after the fact.
People have asked us where they can get it, and seriously, the answer to that is everywhere. There's about 100 sites that host that song.
Yeah, so, if you just search the Picard song.
All right, we'll see you next week with another exciting episode and two shameful guys taking you through it.
I've been Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Later.
Make it so.
He's a Borg.